Welcome to the Fan Pregame, brought to you by Betano. The game starts now. Happy Monday. Ailish and Justin here for the next hour, and we're going to be joined by Frank Saravelli in a moment. And Monica Wright-Rogers, the new GM of the Toronto Tempo, and wear my Tempo hoodie, ready to talk little women's hoops.
Talk a little Tempo.
Talk a little Tempo. The temp was nice in Toronto today.
Yeah.
So it's all
going, a good melt today.
Going well for...
We needed a bit of a melt.
Yeah, we
Roads
sure
Roads are a little messy.
Yeah, a little
Bring
sloppy. We will talk to Monica around 6:30, but we have been anxiously awaiting our first guest of the day.
Yeah, there's some intrigue here.
We don't know how he's going to look, but we know he might be sad. Frank Saravelli, president of hockey content at Daily Faceoff. Frank!
Yeah!
There he is!
Yes!
Yay! Congratulations!
For those listening on radio only, Frank is wearing a moose hat and waving a Canadian flag.
You look great, Frank.
Because Canada won the Four Nations Faceoff, and of course, Frank always pays his debts.
You look
there you
wonderful.
Go. Thank you, Frank.
What noise does a moose make?
I don't know. I just keep thinking of there was a skit that people used to do back in the day in Edmonton radio. Hey, Connor, it's me, the Moose, yeah. Mark Messier.
You
and
look
that's,
great.
That's what I feel like now.
Where'd you get the
costume?
How'd
you get the costume?
How'd you pull this off?
Oh, I mean, the wonders of the internet.
Yeah.
I wish they had like the full-blown Moose pajama suit, which I would have worn had I been able to fit in it. So I did my best. This is what I could pull off. And I'm indebted to you guys. It would have been really fun watching you dress up as the Statue of Liberty and Uncle Sam. But nonetheless, we were one shot away in OT from it going either way.
You know what? We will run this back when the Olympics come. I'll just put it right there now. It'll be fun. We'll see if we can one-up it. But let's talk about Team USA. Like, when you look at that week and a half at least of hockey and the way that that final game played out, like, if you're a Team USA staffer or you're a part of that organization, are there any regrets? Like, did you leave anything on the table? Did you make any wrong decisions, or did it just come down to, as you said, one shot that changed the outcome?
Well, I think if you're the U.S., you're obviously hugely disappointed that this was your opportunity to make a statement about the international hockey hierarchy. And second place just isn't good enough. And that part has been clear for the last 22 years. They had never arrived at a moment like that in best on best play, truly able to take the mantle, so to speak, in the sense that I think even the proudest of Canadian hockey fans would agree that these two teams in the Four Nations Face-Off were more or less a coin flip, that it's super close between both sides. We thought that one of the prevailing opportunities for Canada to win would be with the vaunted attack that they have. And anytime you can throw Connor McDavid, Sidney Crosby, and Nathan MacKinnon on the ice together at the same time, it's a pretty unbelievable combination. That talent ended up winning out. However, I would argue that the blueprint of what the U.S. has moving forward with some of their brawn and size, it's going to present enough fascinating conversations and headaches for Team Canada to try and manage, I think, over the long haul as the U.S. continues to develop and bring on more firepower. Not to say that that can't shift or that Canada can't make changes to their own lineup, but I felt like a large portion of what the U.S. put together as a blueprint can stay together, and that they are neck and neck now moving forward. It's just they got to come through.
Yeah, I think that is the main takeaway, that it is neck and neck. And, you know, I was talking with Mike Fuda last week, and just going over Sidney Crosby's resume. And Sidney Crosby had as many gold medals as the U.S. hockey has had in the 100 years they've been competing on the world stage. And yet we're at a place now where clearly it's going to be a coin flip each and every time. Do you think it stays a coin flip here for the next 20 years or so? Do you think we're going to get basically, you know, two heavyweights slugging it out for the foreseeable future here? Or the way these, not the way that Canada's trending, but more specifically the way U.S. is trending, that, you know, sooner than later, the nose might be out in front a little bit?
I think in the long haul, if we're talking 50 years from now, it probably will shift a bit. But for the foreseeable future, the big difference is that hockey is Canada's sport, and you get the very best athletes in Canada more often than not playing hockey. If we're talking about the U.S., obviously a huge population advantage, but we're still dealing with 1% to 2% of the best athletes in the U.S. are choosing hockey. And until that number slides up, or until you get to a point in time where the math is so overwhelming in participation numbers with the U.S. and Canada that the U.S. has such a huge advantage, Canada is going to continue to churn out top-end talent. The Canadian and U.S. B teams would have been interesting entries into this tournament. That's how much talent I think there is. But unless we get to a spot where the top-end athletes in Canada decide to choose other sports like soccer or basketball or whatever it might be, football, Canada's still going to have a pretty sizable talent base to choose from that it's really, truly an embarrassment of riches.
I know you were speaking to Marty Walsh on Frankly Speaking. Was there any big takeaways? I mean, this is a trial kind of in a sense of what we will see moving forward for international hockey coming back into the mix, you know, the World Cup of Hockey, the Olympics, et cetera. Was there something that worked that the NHL liked? Was there something that maybe you shed a little bit of insight on, hey, we need to fix this for next time?
Well, I'd say one thing that really stands out is just the cooperation and participation that the NHL and NHLPA have going on. Like we saw with Four Nations Faceoff, the power of that. Gary Bettman said quite specifically before the tournament started that there's no chance they could come together on an Olympic and international hockey calendar and set up the World Cup of Hockey in 2028 and beyond without this type of partnership being in place. It wasn't something that would have been on the table before with the NHLPA. So the power of that, I think, is certainly lasting because, you know, we got complete and total buy-in from the players, and not just from an on-ice perspective. The product was fantastic and spoke for itself. But we also had tremendous media access. There's behind-the-scenes shows that are coming from this. The players, there was no balking from them about what they were asked to do at any point in time because they knew that this was their opportunity to help grow the game. And the fact that they have a seat at the table as joint partners, I think really goes a long way to be brought into that mix. What didn't work? Well, the rosters, for one thing, we're going to see a 25-man roster moving forward, I would imagine. That was one thing. I thought that the 10-minute 3-on-3 overtime was a hit.
Yeah.
And by the way, doing the full 5-on-5 Stanley Cup playoff OT, could you imagine deciding that championship game any other way? It was still less than 10 minutes, but the fact that we got that normal style, I mean, I think it just added some gravity and weight to what was a great championship game.
Is anyone like pissed right now? Is anyone not enjoy what we saw? Is anyone kicking up a fuss? Like, as much as like most people are on board, it would be the, I guess, silent minority that might still have as much say as things move forward and progress. Like, is there anyone who's not liking what they saw and voicing that opinion?
Yeah, the Russians. I think they wanted to be part of it.
Yeah.
I'd imagine that the Washington Capitals were also sitting there going, yeah, see, now we're going to take this over the last bit of the season here as the only team in the NHL that didn't have a single player selected to Four Nations. By the way, we're leading the Eastern Conference and lapping our division.
That's a gift for them, I think.
Yeah, they're all healthy and rested.
Yeah, exactly. They, like, you saw some carnage come from these rosters in the last couple games. The Washington has no injuries now and are well-rested, to your point. So maybe they come out being a big winner. If not, you know, certainly probably pretty peeved at the roster selection process. But anyone that's angry that went into this tournament thinking it was going to be nothing, I don't know. I think you got a treat.
We're chatting with Frank, our Moose Saravelli, today as we break down. We won't spend too much time looking backwards, but a couple more on the Four Nations, for me at least, before, you know, NHL trade line's already next week, so we have some on that. I was looking at biggest winners and losers, like, individually from the tournament. And I mean, maybe it was just because a lot of people were surprised to see Sam Bennett maybe at that stage and how impactful he was in that final game. But I think we've been a little bit sleeping on Sam Bennett in a sense. I think a lot of conversations are going to be about what he's going to be worth, if there's going to be bidding wars, what he's going to do in the offseason. Like, how do you view what this tournament might mean for what happens next for Sam Bennett?
Well, it's just another statement from Sam. Well, I should say playoff Sam Bennett, because they're two different players, it seems like. And I think it speaks to how difficult being an NHL GM is. On one hand, you have to build a team and be cap compliant for a regular season and be good enough to get in. And then you need to have enough players like Sam Bennett to win in the playoffs when the game is totally different. And that's a real balance and a struggle. And it's going to be one that teams, I would imagine, are openly talking about in front offices around the league this week and beyond about a player like Sam Bennett. Yeah, he scored 16, 17, 18 goals this season, but his career high in points in the regular season is 49. And I've heard and seen some outlandish numbers thrown around about what to pay Sam Bennett moving forward, a guy that plays an ultra physical style of hockey, turns 29 before free agency hits. And you go, what is the right number moving forward? I'd imagine someone is going to step up with a 6x6 type contract, if not more than that, when free agency opens, if he makes it that far, if the Florida Panthers can't find a way to keep him. You understand if you're the Panthers why you'd want to keep him, because he's been integral to their playoff success. But at some point, there also has to be a limit to that, right? That in this salary cap world, even with it increasing, how much can you really afford to spend for a guy whose production is more or less capped in the regular season, but then gets to the playoffs and is like a totally different beast? He's a fantastic study in that balance.
I think two of the more intriguing spin it forward showcases would be the Tkachuk brothers here on the heels of the Four Nations. Clearly, they were main protagonists in it. And we've got some negative news with Matthew Tkachuk potentially missing a lot of time here in the stretch drive ahead of the playoffs for the Florida Panthers. And then Brady Tkachuk, who is healthier, but in a worse position, at least in the standings with the Ottawa Senators, and has not made the playoffs with the Ottawa Senators. I mean, I think it goes without saying that Brady Tkachuk making the playoffs is of utmost importance here, because he could be a major player here. We have Ailish likening them to the next Kelsey brothers. But how quickly does that need to happen? Like, what sort of disappointment will there be, given that Brady's had a taste here, if Ottawa, in his fourth year on that eight-year deal, still can't make the playoffs?
I think a significant amount, but I'll caution that with, I'm a believer in the Sens and Brady Tkachuk and what they're building. I think they need to make a couple moves to ensure that they get in. Because if you're the Sens, you've known it all along, but you watch that Four Nations face-off and you have to be drooling about the idea of him becoming that impact piece for you when it matters most. And to be able to harness that and continue to get a taste of it, to continue that around the NHL, and then have Ottawa at some point, if it's possible, with him as a leader, become a destination to have other players see it and believe in what you're building, to want to buy in, I think is hugely important. I don't think it's going to be an incredibly long period of time that the Sens are without Brady, and they're going to have to figure out Linus Ullmark and his health, which was another question mark in this tournament. When it comes to Matthew, my understanding is that he did get some imaging today. The Panthers are waiting on a read of that to understand just how long he'll be out. I believe it's a groin injury, a soft tissue injury that obviously he tried to push through for that championship game, and probably in some ways also with his compete level left his team in a bit of a tough spot, only being able to play a period and a half. But if you're Mike Sullivan and you're sitting there going, okay, Matthew Tkachuk's telling me he's good to go, you're putting him in your lineup for that championship game. So tough decision, whether it's shorter term or longer term, the expectation is, as Paul Maurice said in his radio appearance today, is to have Matthew Tkachuk back at some point for the Florida Panthers this season.
All right, let's talk about that NHL trade deadline around the corner, because it has snuck up on us a little bit. We were nicely distracted by the Four Nations face-off, and it is next Friday.
That's another benefit of this
that
Four
was
Nations.
Really
like,
nice.
We didn't, like, we're not belaboring the point with the deadline. Like, we're going to get there. We're going to have plenty to talk about. It's great.
The Shen brothers might be the hot item. I wonder for you how hard it is to land both Shen brothers come trade deadline.
I think it's going to be pretty difficult to pull off, because Braden Schenn, to my knowledge, doesn't really have much interest in leaving St. Louis. He's the captain. He's put down roots there with his family, and he's really enjoyed his time there. So he has that full no-trade clause and the ability to veto anything. With that said, he's also, as much as he loves his brother, obviously, and they're in close contact and communication, and have a chance to join a pretty elite club as two brothers right here in the near future this week have the chance to both of the Shens to cross the 1,000-game mark. As exciting as that opportunity would be, they've also done it already. They played together for a long stretch of time in Philadelphia, so it's not like they haven't scratched that itch already, and not to say that they wouldn't be interested in reuniting, but for any team taking on both those players, you're talking about an $8-plus million swing on your cap that it's probably going to be easier said than done, and you'd also have to navigate somehow around that no-trade clause plus the term remaining on Shen's deal. He's one of the few players in the league that, you know, 2030 and beyond, he's still locked up.
Whispers or loud whispers that the Boston Bruins have kind of waved the white flag a little bit on this season, and I guess you can have your take on that for us. But if they do find themselves in that position, and again, we're pretty close to the deadline here, they're going to have to make up their mind. If that's the case, like, how aggressive could the sell-off be, and what teams have you heard potentially connected to the Boston Bruins?
I think it would be pretty measured. I don't think the Bruins have any interest in rebuilding, and frankly, with the contracts that they have on their books, it would be very difficult to tear down. I think the big 800-pound gorilla in this conversation is what happens with Brad Marchand. He's not just their captain, but still playing at an elite level and still producing at that level. And does 3 or 4 more years of Brad Marchand at a reasonable cap number, does that make sense for the Bruins moving forward? They've got some lower level lineup pieces that they could move out. Trent Frederick, Justin Brazeau. Do they potentially flirt with the idea of changing out one of their defensemen just to lessen some of their salary cap commitments moving forward? All fair questions to ask. But I think the Bruins are probably going to take a more measured approach as to a full swing at this deadline in terms of, you know, reimagining what this team looks like, because Don Sweeney said it over the weekend, and it rings true to me that this is a season that just kind of got off the rails. Mm-hmm. And I think there's lots of reasons to explain why. Their lack of scoring is one, but they also just didn't flat out get the goaltending from Jeremy Swayman necessary to compete. If he's anywhere close to his career average numbers, I think the Bruins are a playoff team without blinking.
We're very curious about the Washington Capitals, because this is no longer a blip. This is no longer a hot start. This is one of the best teams in the NHL.
No longer chasing a single record and just everything else fall by the wayside. This is legit.
And I wonder how that's going to make them approach their trade deadline, because their team is clicking really well. And sometimes there's, like, you know, you don't want to mess what's not broken here, or I know the saying isn't that, but you know what I mean. So what would they be looking to add around the edges if they are going to go for it? And they should go for it, in my opinion.
I'm with you. I don't know that they need a ton, but one thing that stands out clearly for me is a third line center. Mm-hmm. They brought in Lars Eller from Pittsburgh earlier in the season as sort of a nod to that being a need, and not a knock on Eller, but I think at this stage of his career, he frankly can't keep up. I think he would make a lot more sense if you slid him a little bit further down the lineup and made him a fourth line center option for that team. So finding that third line center would be of paramount importance. I think their defense is really well structured. They're getting some unbelievable seasons out of some of their acquisitions. Jacob Chychrun's 17 goals on the back end could be flirting with 25 goals, which would be something from a defenseman. You know, I think a defenseman like Matt Roy is going to pay huge dividends in the playoffs with the way that he defends. So the one thing about the Caps that I find super curious is they have gotten a ton of career seasons out of players, whether it's been Dubois and that acquisition, or Protas or McMichael, or a lot of guys. Tom Wilson has already set a career high in goals. Can some of these things be repeated next year? And if not, or if you have any doubts about it, how deep will you dig into that pretty strong prospect pool in order to make things happen? Again, I think the word, or opportune word of the day, would be measured. Make your addition, try and help this team, and think back to, if you're Chris Patrick, first year GM, to the 2018 playoffs and the one big deadline acquisition that the Washington Capitals made on their way to a Stanley Cup was Michael Kempney on the back end for a third round pick. So yet another reminder that the team that makes the biggest splash at the trade deadline isn't necessarily the team with the prize at the end of it.
And the acquisition could be Ryan Leonard of Boston College, who looks like he's ready to go as well, having another great season with Boston College. Last one for you, Frank. Oilers or Leafs? Which team makes the bigger move ahead of March 7th?
I'm going to say Leafs. I have real doubts about exactly how much the Oilers can do. I had a conversation with Stan Bowman on my podcast. That's going to drop on Wednesday, where they're still hoping to get word from Evander Kane, hoping to get word by March 1st as to his status for the remainder of the regular season. And I don't think they feel too comfortable about that situation one way or the other, that they could go out and spend his LTIR money. And so if that's the case, then they're in, dollar out mode. And they also don't have a whole ton of assets. So you could be looking at a bottom six forward acquisition for this Oiler team that kind of limits them. Whereas I think the Leafs have a whole number of different options at play for them to either be aggressive, to sit back. I just think they've got more opportunity to make something happen than where the Oilers are at this exact moment in time.
It's going to be some moose-sickle chairs come next Friday.
You figured it out.
There we go.
Well done.
Thanks. Well, Frank, thanks for playing along. Better luck next year. And we appreciate the effort to get that moose hat.
You make
I'm just a good sport. Just,
you
just
are.
Letting
you make
know.
A good Canadian, Frank. Yeah, you make a really good Canadian.
We'll have
Canadian.
You whenever, man. Come on up. Thanks so much, Frank. We'll definitely chat next week. Appreciate it.
See you guys.
That's Frank Saravelli of DailyFaceoff.com in his Canadian flag and moose
that
costume.
That was far more palatable than wearing American garb today.
You know what I was just thinking? We're probably on the screens at Moose Winooski's in Kitchener, and they're probably like, what's happening?
Moose Winooski's?
Yeah, you don't know what Moose Winooski's is?
No.
Oh, my God.
Like a bar?
Yes.
Wow.
You don't know Moose Winooski's?
In Kitchener?
Well, I think there's more than one, but I know the one in Kitchener. I've been to it. That's peak hockey tournament.
Shout out to the folks at Moose Winooski's.
Yeah.
I'd love to be there.
Moose Winooski's is legendary.
Okay.
Justin, get out more, man.
I'm going to a bar in Kitchener?
Yeah, you might.
On a whim?
I hope you do.
If I pass through,
it's pretty legendary. There's a moose outside, and like inside, it's very rustic Banff moose vibes.
Mm-hmm. It could be one of your segments on your tour of hamlets and your explorations of small town Ontario.
I mean, Kitchener's
not really
a hamlet, but shout out to Moose Winooski's. If we're on your screens now, that was kind of for you. Okay, that was fun. He played along well. I'm glad I didn't have to get a Statue of Liberty costume.
Yeah.
That was not going to be as easy as just the hat that he had on.
Yeah, it was probably like, it wasn't that big of a lift for him.
Yeah, it's good. And, he's got kids. Maybe there'll be a moose for Halloween.
There you go.
Okay.
We'll get some use out of it.
All right. We are spinning forward a little bit of our thoughts here on the NHL trade deadline and Four Nations and what's going to happen next. So let's take a look in our Best Bet segment at how we can predict the future. So time now for Best Bets brought to you by Betano. We are talking about some teams that are in either vulnerable positions or positions to kind of pounce on the opportunity of the next week and a half before the trade deadline. And for me, I'm really liking two teams to win their conferences, the Leafs and Vegas. Now you can parlay those both to win their conferences at 3-1. I just really like Toronto being able to take advantage of the Florida Panthers if they're depleted, if they're injured without Matthew Tkachuk.
Is this to meet in the Stanley Cup final to win your conference?
No, to win their conference. To win. Or the division. That should have been division. My bad.
Oh, it's okay.
I meant to write division. Nonetheless, to win their divisions. Right now, Leafs leading Panthers, but they've been kind of back and forth. But plus money to hold on to the top spot there in the Atlantic. And then looking at Vegas, who has been jockeying with Edmonton. I think Vegas is prone to make some big-time trade deadline. That's it. Leafs and Vegas win the division. Prone to make some really big decisions here at the trade deadline. I feel like they can hold off. So if you just pick those two to win their division right now, I mean, the other two obviously are far, far and away going to win it, the Jets and the Capitals. So value on those two that are still
in
the
air. A little fade there on the Stanley Cup finalists from last year in the Oilers and Panthers.
They're dealing with a little bit of fatigue, and they don't need to win their division.
I think Matthew Tkachuk injury is massive for the Leafs.
And I think that the Leafs really want to win the division, and they have a great shot. They have one of the easiest schedules down the stretch as well.
Interesting. Tampa's only 4 points back with the game in hand.
I know. You keep bringing Tampa up. They are a little sketchy.
I might have to look into that price.
Can I do two more quickly?
Sure.
I've also got... This is a tough one for our Vancouver folks. Vancouver to not make the playoffs. That's plus 150. I just, once again, we come back from...
It's a bad night.
We come back from Four Nations Faceoff, a lot of drama. Again, I just don't know if this team has enough with just Quinn Hughes shouldering all of the drama and the pressure to hold on to that final wild card spot, and Calgary is like nipping at their heels. So Vancouver to miss the playoffs is plus 150, and on the other side of that, Calgary to make the playoffs is plus 250. I just like the idea of one of those guys getting in, and I'm feeling good about Calgary. I've been watching Dustin Wolf. He looks amazing. So a little bit of value there to find some teams either to not or to make the playoffs.
Yeah, it's probably Vancouver that'll have to come out if Calgary makes it. Mm-hmm. So those two might both cash in that scenario. Okay, I like the Washington Capitals all of a sudden.
Yes.
I might be drinking the Kool-Aid. I might be getting a little excited after a really great weekend, but I'm trying to figure out, and I've been trying to figure out who's going to win the Eastern Conference for a while now. Mm-hmm. And I look at these teams and I see flaws everywhere. The Maple Leafs, like, they're still short bodies. Panthers might be missing Matthew Tkachuk. Tampa Bay Lightning, they're a couple years past their prime. Carolina, Mikko Rantanen doesn't want to sign there and might get traded before the deadline. Devils, Jack Hughes. You like that tournament from Jack Hughes at the Four Nations Faceoff? Not especially. And Detroit and Ottawa, not ready yet as wild card contenders. Like, it just feels like Washington is in a great position to go to the Stanley Cup final. And if they add someone before the deadline, and if they just add Ryan Leonard from the collegiate ranks, I think they've got a built-in acquisition that can help them push this over the top. I think Washington is in a wonderful position to go to the Stanley Cup final. So I'm going to play a couple matchups because I like a couple teams out west, and I'm not as sure as I am with the Capitals. So against Vegas, a rematch of the Stanley Cup final in 2018, 39-1. Jets, 27-1. Oilers, 18.5-1. If you had you put me on the spot right now, I got to pick the Stanley Cup finalists. I think like it's Vegas. Washington and Vegas.
Yeah.
I think it's a rematch of 7 years ago, and I think this time Vegas might win.
Yeah, I could totally see that. I'm feeling like we've been sharing our brain here with the Vegas being big sellers or big buyers at the trade deadline, and Capitals, and we just talked to Frank, like, they are really set up for success. They don't need to do a lot of overhauling. So a team that might be able to also have just that energy of riding this Ovi thing the whole way, like, they kind of have a little bit of storybook to them this year. So. Mm-hmm. I like those long shot odds because I can see a Stanley Cup matchup with either of those four teams. Okay, that was Best Bets brought to you by Betano. Tap into Betano today. We will take a quick break. Monica Wright-Rogers, GM of the Toronto Temple, will join us next. We'll go through just the opportunity at hand, what excites her about being the first Canadian WNBA franchise kicking off still in a year, and maybe see what it's like sharing in the arena with the Toronto PWHL team, which I think is really sweet as well. And then we'll wrap up with some stories. We've got Mad Max possibly pitching. Well, definitely pitching for the Blue Jays tomorrow unless it's rained out. A couple things to look forward to before we send you on the way. We'll be right back on the Fan Pregame.
Hey, it's Matt Marchese.
And I'm Mike Fiuta.
We're discussing the top stories of the day across the NHL and the hockey world, weekdays at noon.
It's the Fan Hockey Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on the Fan Pregame on Sportsnet at Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Later on tonight, we got a doubleheader basketball for you. Denver, Indiana, 7 p.m. tip. Charlotte and Sacramento, 10 p.m. Those are both on Sportsnet 1. Canada and Mexico and some FIBA action, 8 p.m. on Sportsnet 360. And right now, across the network, we've got some TGL action for you and another matchup tonight at 9. All of the sports happening.
Yeah.
All at once.
Big bounce back spot here for Canada.
It is. Yeah.
I hope.
Okay. Good stuff. We talked about Blue Jays rained out today. So we'll look ahead at tomorrow's start. It will be Max Scherzer. We'll talk about that a little bit as we wrap up the show. But really excited to be joined by Monica Wright-Rogers, GM of the Toronto Tempo, just announced about a week ago. Monica, we really appreciate you jumping on. I know this has been a busy stretch for you, so congratulations and welcome officially to the city.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate being on.
Yeah, we're excited to talk. I know the action doesn't start till, 2026, but we got lots to go through. I mean, mostly I was looking through your career and you've accomplished so much, both on and off the court. And I wonder what it was that first attracted you to the opportunity to take over this role in an inaugural franchise in a new country, an exciting endeavor? Like, what was it for you that said, yes, this is where I want to take my talents, my passion to the Toronto Tempo?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think throughout the interview process, I really was drawn to Teresa and ownership and also Teresa's team and just everything that they embodied and communicated. Overall, I think that, you know, we have similar core values and we're aligned on a lot in terms of vision. And so it just ended up being a perfect fit on both sides.
So if we're going by the name, Toronto's got to play with some tempo, right? Like, how literally are we taking that as you aim to build out a team in time? And I guess more seriously, what sort of basketball do you want to see the Tempo play?
Well, personally, that I say up tempo because that is how I played as a player. That is how I enjoyed playing. But, you know, just backing up, the way we play on court will be a combination of my vision as well as our future head coach's vision for what you know, how we want to play. And then I think we'll also embody the attributes of what we know is already proven to win in this league. So, you know, up-tempo is fun. I think fans love it. I loved it as a player, but we do need to ensure that it is clear that it will, you know, be the vision of the head coach, my vision, as well as what we'll determine in terms of WNBA, what we already know will win in this league. So
you're in a somewhat unique position because you played in the league not so long ago. We're very successful in the early 2010s. In terms of at the team level in the WNBA. So you're kind of, it's pretty fresh what you'd want in a coach, what you liked in a coach. And as you plan to, you know, put a coach in place here to take over the Tempo, like what sort of characteristics will you be looking for?
Yeah, I think you make a great point. Like being able to be a player and win at this level really is an edge up, I think, in terms of like me already knowing what I'm looking for. And, you know, first and foremost, we have not started an official process, but I think in a coach, we always want someone who is a leader on and off the court, especially, again, like you stated, with an expansion franchise. This community is very hungry for and has an appetite for this team. And so having a presence in the community is vital in whoever we select as the head coach. Definitely want someone who can be creative, intelligent, and who has integrity. I think in everyone that we bring on to this staff, having a competitive edge for me is always a non-negotiable.
Yeah, I think those are like the great characteristics from a head coach. And I also wonder, like, that's probably how you're going to want to develop your team as well. On a more, I guess, forward look, having a Canadian talent, having a Canadian star or someone that, you know, you can develop that is Canadian, like, I know you can't pick and choose, but like, how exciting would it be to have some Canadian homegrown talent being able to play for the Toronto Tempo, that first Canadian franchise? I know you're not going to singularly pick Canadians, but if one fell in your lap and you could market around a Canadian, like, I think it'd be a perfect fit.
Oh, man, as I tell everyone, I can't make any promises, but I am enormously excited about the talent in our league and in coming into our league that comes from the country of Canada. And I think, you know, we're going to have a lot of options moving forward just in seeing the talent just coming out of everywhere across the country.
Yeah, it feels like it's coming at a good time. I mean, the level of talent in basketball in this country is booming at the moment, and it should be something that will help the Tempo now, but also down the line as well. But it can't exclusively be Canadians. And if we're looking at the Raptors as a comparison, I mean, it's been hard over the years for those running the Raptors to sell athletes on Toronto. I know it's fresh, but how would you sell Toronto to athletes, whether it be free agents or maybe undrafted players, whatever it may be, maybe even a coach? How would you best sell Toronto given what you know about Toronto?
Well, based on the warm welcome and excitement I felt in my first couple of days here, I don't have to do a lot of work. Toronto will sell itself. Once we get them here in market, they will absolutely fall in love with this city and this country.
I wonder, like, and I know this hasn't happened too often with a new expansion team, but what is it that's difficult about, you're not just coming to be a GM of a team that's already got, you know, a 10-year history, 20-year history. You are getting to kind of pave the way for a franchise in a new city. what excites you about some of those challenges? Because you get to be like the creator, the person gets to kind of write that roadmap, which is a unique opportunity in WNBA. What is it that you're most looking forward to, I guess, when you get to take that opportunity on?
Just how you said, you know, writing your own roadmap. You know, I'm not coming in inheriting a situation that I'll have to try to, you know, clean out and resurface. This is completely a build from the ground up. We are laying the foundation ourselves and putting our touch on it, and that is the most exciting thing about this opportunity. And then you add on top of that the city, the sports culture here, that's the foundation that's already laid. And, you know, it's really an enormous opportunity to be a top-tier franchise in the WNBA. Not many challenges in my eyes ahead.
Sorry, Monica. Sorry, excuse me. I've lost my train of thought there for a second. Teresa Resch is where I wanted to go. Teresa Resch, superstar executive, you know, before the Tempo were even a thing. And, of course, Teresa Resch involved in hiring you. I wonder, you obviously made a good first impression on her, but what was it and vice versa? Like, what sort of impression did she have on you?
I think Teresa's reputation around the league, both WNBA and NBA, is that of a hard worker and someone that, you know, is definitely passionate about the game. And so, again, when I mentioned that our core values align for the vision of this team and for how we plan to build it, work ethic and passion are two that really reflect me. And so, you know, again, when you find like-minded individuals that you can build with, it's sometimes people don't want to be in those difficult situations or roll their sleeves up. Both of us embrace that. Both of us embrace the work. And I think that was one of the biggest things that really inspired me to want to join her in building this franchise.
We're chatting with Monica Wright-Rogers, the GM of the Toronto Tempo. Now, Justin mentioned it a little while back, but you had an opportunity, obviously, to play in the WNBA, to win in the WNBA. But I wonder for you now, being involved both off and on the court, where has it really grown the most for you that you're the most proud of? We obviously have fans that just step in brand new. Maybe they saw the March Madness and they got excited about women's basketball, but you were a part of it when it wasn't the easiest thing to access on TV, to find sponsorship dollars, to circle female athletes and look up to and be like, I want to be like her. And now it's way more accessible. It's awesome to be able to consume the product. Like, where have you seen the most growth that you're, I guess, the most proud of from being someone that was in the league in the 2010s and seeing where it is now in 2026 and beyond?
Yeah, I think you mentioned it, just having access to it, which means that, you know, young ballers around the world are also able to have access to it, which means they can one day aspire to be something that they've already seen achieved. And then also, I'm really excited about just where the league is going, and then the people that are now tuning in, appreciating the women's game for what it is, as opposed to comparing it to another league. So, you know, it's an exciting time for women's sports in general. Obviously, for me, women's basketball.
Monica, you won championships with Maya Moore at the managerial level. You were a part of teams with Diana Taurasi, Brittany Griner. When you reflect on your WNBA career, I guess, not specifically as a player, just in whole or leading up to this moment where you're taking over the Tempo, like who's like stands alone as influential in, you know, getting you to the next level or pushing you to do more? When you reflect, you know, who's top of mind for you?
Oh, so many people. I wouldn't know where to start. But at every level of my career, there was always someone. And, you know, obviously I had to be in the right mindset to embrace that pushing and that, you know, coaching. But I could take up a whole hour segment thanking and recognizing the people that are responsible for my growth in this industry.
I think it's really awesome that the Toronto Tempo will play at Coca-Cola Coliseum, because I'm a former pro hockey player, and you know the PWHL Toronto team, the Scepters, are also playing out at that arena, and I just thought it awesome to have like a women's sports hub in the city. I don't know how much you've been able to, since you've, you know, just been announced, but connect with the PWHL or some other women's sports franchises. But does that excite you to kind of have a a joint home with a team that's started inaugural season, inaugural league, has now been able to build a fan base and build a connection with the city. And you kind of get to share that place as one successful women's sports hub. Like, is that something that that you're looking at as a way to have a partnership with?
Oh, 100%. That's on my to-do list. And, you know, as I continue to navigate the city as a newbie, I will definitely be reaching out to leaders of those women's leagues just to establish a relationship and continue to grow and learn more about the women's sports culture here.
Have you found the traffic okay?
Honestly, it's not that bad compared to some of the cities I've been to.
Okay, that's really
first.
Positive.
That's a positive spin.
Sometimes getting down to Coca-Cola CM can be a little difficult, so we'll get you like a good roadmap to avoid some of the congestion. But I'm glad that was a good positive response because that's usually the biggest gripe with Toronto is getting to places. Monica, we really appreciate your time.
I am riding in it and not driving in it.
Well, that's true. Okay, you might be winning already. This was great. It was so great to be able to pick your brain and to get you acclimated with. Hopefully we get to chat a lot when the team makes some big announcements. I know you have some hiring to do, some team structuring to do, so we'll definitely keep you busy. We appreciate you coming on and all the best down the road.
Great. Thank you so much.
Of course. Congratulations. That's Monica Wright-Rogers, the newest general manager of the Toronto Tempo, set to kick off in 2026. So we got lots to get excited for. I look forward to, and they have a lot of things to get on their plate. So I'm sure she's busy.
Yeah. She's young, only 36 years old, just recently played in the WNBA, yeah. Like kind of a fast
two-time
rising
champ.
Star in the WNBA. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think there should be some enthusiasm and some positive energy around the choice and mm-hmm. how she's going to build the tempo.
Yeah, two-time WNBA champion in 2011 and 2013. As you said, she was on WNBA All-Rookie team. She played at Virginia, where she killed it there.
Her and Barker will get along.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, so it'll be great. I mean, it's a huge, huge puzzle piece to put into play. Like, your general manager, huge responsibility, of course, building that team. I was excited to hear that I could hear her smiling a little bit at the idea of having Canadian talent on that team. And it's going to be really interesting, like who becomes a free agent and how they do the expansion draft and all that stuff, because I think it would go a long way having some of the big time WNBA Canadians possibly representing the Toronto Tempo. Not that they exclusively have to be Canadian, but it would be awesome to see. So
yeah, Silas,
we'll manifest.
Silas Ords is 2028 eligible.
Okay.
So maybe there's something in the future there, okay. But I guess they can continue dreaming on it. But there will be Canadian talent to come through for sure for the Tempo. It's a really, really good time to be investing in basketball in this country and in Toronto specifically.
All right. That was Monica Wright-Rogers. Okay, so we have a couple things to go through on the end of our show. Too bad the Blue Jays were rained out today, but I guess we can turn our attention.
Undefeated for another day.
They are undefeated, folks. They are 2-0 in Grapefruit League action, but tomorrow's a big one. Tomorrow is Max Scherzer's start, and yes, we don't know how long he's going to pitch for or how great he's going to look, but I think it's a huge day because this is a 1 o'clock start tomorrow. They're playing the Cardinals, and I mean, I'm just like really excited. I started working backwards on the weekend to see when he would probably start for the Blue Jays. So I was like, what do you think? He's the fourth starter for the Jays?
I think that makes sense from a pecking order standpoint.
So I started going through the Blue Jays schedule to see when he would have his first start at in Toronto because I think that's one you want to get down for. This is a pretty big signing for the Blue Jays and a lot of questions around what his health's going to look like. He's 40 years old. I don't care. I'm excited to watch.
Yeah, I don't want to be negative, but like, you know, there's an expectation that, okay, is he going to pitch every fifth day all summer long? Like,
well,
there
no,
might
so
be
the start of the season, Justin.
I know,
March 30th,
but you got to get through spring before you get to the
yeah,
start of the
so
season.
Maybe so maybe he gets a couple under his belt.
I'm just saying, I'm going to be watching
I don't
tomorrow.
I'm going to pitch nine innings
I'm going to be watching tomorrow because I don't want to miss anything. I don't want to,
yes, okay.
You know, oh, Max isn't feeling, you know, the
okay,
arm's not feeling.
Okay.
I don't want to go there, but
chill.
I'm just saying, I think tomorrow I'm going to be there just to make sure because I want to see.
At 1 p.m. on
I want to see
too.
Max Scherzer in a Blue Jays uniform, and we can guarantee that tomorrow.
He will be
so
there.
At least
1 o'clock.
I'm going to be there as well, just to make sure. That's all I'm saying,
yeah.
Just to make sure.
I'm excited to see because you never know what's going to happen. You're right. I did do some backwards math, and if he's our fourth starter, The Blue Jays start the season at home, which they usually don't do, against the Orioles. And
that renovations last few years. Like, that's it's true. Put them at a little deficit, so maybe this year start on the right foot.
So I will tell you that if you want to go see Max Scherzer, it's probably, if he's the fourth starter, Sunday, March 30th at 1:37 p.m. Get your tickets now. I can't guarantee it, but that'd be sweet.
Yeah. I mean, that's if I'm picking one early on, that's the one.
Okay.
We'll just put it that way.
I think he's probably
Sunday afternoon,
probably fourth starter. Right?
Yeah, I think so.
What if they made him opening day starter?
I think that would be a little offensive to the guys who have been
there. It'd be amazing. No, they already sell enough tickets.
You're,
for opening
you have
day.
Too much stake. No, Max Scherzer already.
No.
Look at you. I can see it.
I'm excited, but they already have enough tickets sold for opening day. So it's smart to put them fourth so you get people in the door again.
Sure. Yeah, it's a good spin.
The Blue Jays, I don't have in front of me, but they have their promotional schedule released. Okay. I can get it. And they had some amazing things this year. They had Okay.
I'm convinced the Blue Jays do this better than any other team.
Well, they're up there for sure. But it was the quantity and the quality were awesome. So I'm going to find the one I want to tell you about. It's a Vladdy hockey jersey. Here it is, City Connect Fridays.
They did that last year, didn't they? Didn't they?
It's pretty sick. And it's like, but it's the City Connect, so the black with the red and the blue. And they've got a Vladdy jersey this year, which I thought was awesome. They got a lot of really great things this year.
It could be a major collector's item.
So I was thinking, when I was going through them, I felt like there was more Vlad than usual. I think there was like a Vladdy Silver Slugger bobblehead, the Vladdy hockey jersey, the Vladdy Salsa Night dancing bobblehead giveaway, the Vladdy Silver Slugger. I already said that one.
Get it while you can.
So anyway, get in there and get them while you can. Okay, Mad Max, what else?
Well, let's stay on Vlad.
Vlad, yes.
Are you okay with him liking pictures of himself in a Yankees uniform? You are?
No, I was saying let's talk about this. So for those that don't know, he liked a photo in, what was it, like one of those jersey swaps?
Photoshop jersey swap, yeah, whatever.
Yeah. I don't know.
Floating around Instagram.
I could see it two ways. Like, whatever, it's social media, you can do whatever you want. But obviously all attention is on Vlad. And is Vlad going to move on in free agency? And he said he didn't want to be distracted by free agency. And I can see why that would be frustrating for fans. It's so easy to not like the button, but he did like it. And then now we're talking about it and we're distracted by this. So I didn't love it. How about that?
I don't know how you could love it.
Yeah.
I personally didn't know this until Blair and Barker, who had a heated conversation.
That
about
was
this.
Must
if you
listen.
Want a good conversation on Vlad today,
it
go back
really
and
good.
Listen to Blair and Barker earlier today on the podcast feed. But yeah, like, so he had an interview with John Heyman, and the Blue Jays employed interpreter, Hector LeBron, I believe is his name, is basically, you know, like, he should probably be involved in PR. Is there, I don't know if PR was there or not, but Hector LeBron is just doing these translations where Vladdy's like openly, not openly campaigning, but pretty close to openly campaigning to be a Yankee next year, at least have them interested.
But what
like,
is he supposed to do?
It's so dirty already.
What is he supposed to do if you're the interpreter? Say, well, I'm not saying that. You kind of have to say what
your
player says.
But I would be like, okay, who's paying the salary? Like, Vlad should be paying the salary if this is how it's going to be, no?
Okay, I'm a little skewed by what Blair and Barker were arguing about, which is really good. You have to listen to it. And Blair said it right. He said everyone did their job. Like, the interviewer, John Heyman, asked the right questions. Vlad answered the questions honestly, and the interpreter gave the
actual... You can't be doing this all year, though.
No, and then that was another argument that Blair and Barker had, was that this could become a circus where he rolls into play the Mets, and then he rolls into play the Dodgers, and we're having the same, free agency conversation. So it can get tiring, and it probably will become a very long season narrative, but...
I don't know if PR was there, but I think PR has got to be, like, there every time Vladdy's speaking. He can't be doing this every,
you know,
like,
what it needs
these
to be
private
like?
Conversations every time he goes to a new ballpark. This is going
to
be a mess.
What it needs to be like is when Austin Matthews stood at the podium on the first day of...
That was up to Austin Matthews. Vladdy doesn't want to do that.
I know.
Because he wants to drum up interest. So you're going to use the year to drum up
people
interest.
People are going to be interested regardless.
Exactly.
They know who he is.
We don't need Vladdy talking the whole
year. I don't think they can be like, no media.
I don't know. This is going to...
But when Austin Matthews said, I'm never talking about my contract,
but
nobody
Vladdy
talked
said,
about
I don't
it.
Want it. He put this arbitrary deadline there because I don't want to be a distraction. He's been doing nothing but distracting from the point since the moment that happened, or since the moment we hit that arbitrary deadline. This is going to be awful if this is the entire year.
It might be. Or, you know what, this was the first interview during spring training. I'm going to hold my breath and say that it had to have one big one. You had to get the John Heyman interview. You had to have one big one.
Every insider comes into contact with him, it's going to happen.
It's the first big thing at spring training. And maybe it quiets down. I wince when I said that.
The optimist.
I'm trying my best. But yeah, it wasn't great. What could you do?
And it isn't great.
It isn't great. He did look good in pinstripes. He liked that photo.
Yeah, if I was him, I probably wouldn't like it. Well, like I would like it internally. I just wouldn't show that because I would then be a distraction.
Yeah.
And I said I didn't want to be a distraction.
Yeah, we'll talk lots of Blue Jays this week or after this week probably, leading into when spring training wraps up. But Blue Jays are undefeated, so maybe it's working for them. Eh?
A couple more rain days, extend that.
It's inspiring.
Now we got to see Max Scherzer.
All right, folks, that was the Fan Pregame brought to you by Betano. The game starts now. Have a great night.